Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's very own money podcast. I'm Kaizad Adajania, Money Control's personal finance editor. I have with me Lovai Navlaki today. He's a Bangalore-based financial planner and he's the MD and CEO of International Money Matters, which is a financial planning and investment advisory firm. Last week, SEBI amended its 2013 Investor Advisor Guidelines. Now, this was done after many years of consultations and deliberations in which SEBI had issued 4 consultation papers. Lovai is here to tell us how your relationship with your investment advisor will now change. Hi, Lovai. Welcome to the podcast. We are talking about the SEBI Investor Advisor Guidelines regulations. Last Friday, they came up with amendments to the SEBI Investment Advisor Guidelines of 2013. And, you know, there's been so much of back and forth between the regulations and the industry, fraternity, people such as yourselves. And I'm sure you guys also must be relieved that, you know, after 4 consultation papers and so much of consulting, and the regulations, mind you, investor advisor regulations are 2013 and we're in 2020 right now. So, you know, some amount of finality, we can say, has been arrived at. Of course, we need to see the finer prints and we'll discuss some of these aspects today in the podcast. But Lovai, how does it feel like, you know, after so many consultation papers, finally, do you feel that, you know, we can, you know, lay certain aspects to rest and now we can look forward in growing the investment advisory fraternity?
Yeah, I think in a big way, as you described, I think there is a sense of relief that, you know, the uncertainties about consultation paper and there's likely to be this regulation and likely to be this change is finally sort of put to rest and it is gazetted. At one stage, I think we thought that because of the pandemic situation, everything is on hold. So as we know, some of this came up in the board meeting in February and was announced as part of the decisions taken at the board. But then the paper never came out. The gazette never came out. The circular has not come out. So we were wondering what happened. So to that extent, yes, I think it does feel that, yes, at least it's out now. We can, there's something real to either agree to, modify, change our business models around, but at least we have some reference point.
And some willingness to sort of go forward as far as the regulations are concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think we can, we do expect that, you know, the regulation will satisfy everybody. There will be somebody who will object certain portions or they will require to make changes to their business or their approach. But at least we know now what changes I have to make. Otherwise, it was all speculation. And all speculation. Anyways, I think, yeah, I think there were times, I know, when the first consultation paper came out, people actually tried to change their models and be ready for as soon as regulation will come in line with first consultation. Then a second came and some people who missed time said, oh yeah, now I have to change my model. And I feel, you know, in one way grateful that we never changed our models based on consultation paper. Otherwise, you tend to think, oh, it's come from the regulator. So the only thing now it will do, they will do, come up with the regulation in line with the consultation. But thank God we didn't do that. And I think there'll be, as you said, a sense of finality to it. It may be semi-finality, but at least it's some final.
Okay. So, Lovai, you know, the first thing that the amendments start by discussing is that at an individual, so there are two types of financial advisors that our readers, the public at large, can go to. These are registered financial advisors, right? So one can be at an individual level and one can be at the corporate level. Okay. Now, obviously, tradition, just to give a bit of a background to our readers, financial advisors also have been distributing mutual fund schemes and also they have been providing a lot of value-added services for which they charge a fee. In many outfits so far, both these services were offered depending on who the client was and depending on what your needs were. Now, what SEBI has said finally now in this latest amendment is that at an individual level, an individual advisor, if an advisor is working on his own, you know, at an individual name, then they have to either choose to be a mutual fund distributor or choose to be a financial advisor. But at the corporate level, if you are at a corporate advisory, okay, XYZ, Private Limited or whatever, then at a client level, you have to segregate whether you want to offer an advisory for which you charge a fee, or you offer a distribution services for, don't charge a fee, but you earn commission from mutual funds. So I could be one client, my neighbor could be another client, we could both be going to the same corporate advisory, but I might be a fee-based client, so I may pay fees, my neighbor may not pay fees because, you know, he would be interested mostly just in distribution services. So Lovai, from an individual advisor's point of view, how does this change now? And what is the implication for the clients of those individual advisory?
So even before we get into the individual advisory, I think one important modification that has come in also is that somebody holding himself out to be a investment advisor and financial advisor, wealth manager, and many such names like this, they are not allowed to use it unless they are registered under the Investment Advisor Act. Let's say for a minute, we assume that everyone else is doing only distribution of mutual funds. Then they will call themselves mutual fund distributor. Otherwise, you are an advisor. Once you are an advisor, you are registered under the Act. And if you are registered under the Act, basically as an advisor, as an individual advisor, I have to offer only advice. I can also obviously implement. So I'm allowed to offer implementation services. I can buy and sell, but it has to be only in direct schemes.
Okay.
So which means I cannot earn from the product. I can only earn from the client.
Okay.
So that's all that is permitted in my understanding as an individual.
Okay. Okay. And how do you come to know from that person's name or his outfit's name that this is a registered advisor? Okay. And this is what I will get and this is what I will not get. You said they cannot use, they have to use words like advisor or at least a distributor, for example. Let's say if you go to a mutual fund distributor, how do you know whether that person is just a distributor? He can also charge fees.
So first and foremost, you have to mention your license number in your communication. You obviously also have to put it on your website and your card and stuff like that.
Okay.
So once you have put that and you know that, you know, this is a person who is registered under the Act.
Okay.
I think that's a simple way. Otherwise, you can obviously go to the SEBI website and there's a list of investment advisors there and you can go and check based on, you know, alphabet.
Okay.
And say, okay, is Kaizad a registered investment advisor or not?
Okay. Okay. And the distributor cannot use the word advisor or planner or investment advisor or financial words like these to...
Yeah. So they have mentioned a few words in the regulation, but they've said and words like these. So I think anything which denotes that you are an advisor and you're offering advice cannot be used. I think they've even mentioned wealth manager. So from what I recall, maybe I should refer and confirm what are the words that they cannot use.
So any distributor and then, having these kind of words, it's a sort of a signal to the investor that, this is a financial, this is a distributor, or if it is a financial advisor or registered advisor, then you have the right to sort of ask them for the license to be able to decipher whether this is an advisory practice or this is just a distribution practice.
Correct. So the way it sort of works is that if I'm providing you advice, then first and foremost, I am acting in your interest. I am registered under the Act. I have adequate net worth. I have suitable qualifications and certification in place. Obviously, I'm open to audit. And I am not forcing you to implement the advice that I'm giving through me. So as an individual, first and foremost, I cannot implement through me other than through a direct plan. And if I'm a company, then I can implement through a separate investment division.
Okay. Because, Lobai, one of our readers actually got back to us after the Gazette came out last week. And he said that, his own distributor actually invests in the regular plan and charges an advisory fee to the client. So what's the recourse for these clients? What's the recourse for these investors?
So earlier, as per the regulation, the way it is in 2013 regulation, you were allowed to do this. You're not prohibited from not doing this. So you could charge a fee and then say, okay, let's say you come in and say, I'm willing to pay you your fee and the fee is 100 rupees and I'll put you all in direct plan. But your neighbor comes and says, I'm willing to pay a fee, but I'll pay only 50 rupees, let us say. So then it was a commercial decision saying, okay, then if you're paying me 50 rupees, I'll not put you in direct plan, I'll put you in regular plan. I'll still end up earning the same 100 rupees, but you will feel less pain. You're writing a check for a lower amount or whatever reason.
Fees was decided earlier, you're saying. In the earlier regulation, in the original regulation, the fees...
In the earlier regulation, yes. Invariably, I think even in the new regulation, the fee will be decided based on what the model is of the advisor. What is the fee he wants to charge and what is the willingness of the client to pay that fee.
Okay.
But as I'm saying is that earlier, I could have a client from whom I was charging a fee I was doing maybe more work, and to compensate for that, the client had agreed as long as I was transparent. I think a key part of the regulation which exists already, which is not taking the current gazette, was the fact that in the earlier regulation itself, the important aspect of that regulation was transparency. That you had to explain to clients what is it that you were earning, if you were earning, and all of that was something that was part and parcel of that regulation. Now what they are saying is that for somebody who is willing to pay some fee, but you want to put in a regular plan, that's not allowed. Let's move from individual to non-individual. So first and foremost, they've changed the corporate to non-individual, which essentially covers corporate, LLP, and partnership. So anything other than individual is non-individual. And for each of these entities, they can have a separate division which does only distribution services. But that has to be at a client level. So I cannot have the same client and in, you know, their further defined family. I cannot have client. And if I have a client in advisory, I can't have any of the family members also in distribution.
In the original regulation, didn't SEBI specifically write that, you know, if you accept a fee, I mean, first of all, who is an advisor? A financial advisor is one who accepts fee. And if you accept fee, then the money should go in the direct plan, not in the regular plan.
No, there was no such compulsion in 2013 to put it in direct plan. And that also probably was a result of the fact that the direct plan feeds, if let's say you come to me as a client and I'm taking you as in advice in 2013 and 14, and I invest in a direct plan, I did not have access to the feeds as a RIA. That only got announced probably 2.5 years ago. So it took 4 or 5 years before SEBI, and that's something that we had actively sort of pursued with SEBI, saying, you know, we are RIA, at least allow our clients to be in direct plans. I mean, this is quite silly. So for some of us who were registered early, we were charging a fee and we were getting a commission only because we were not allowed to put the investment in a direct plan.
Now you're saying that a registered advisor must charge fees, number one, and must put the money of your clients in direct plans, where there is no commission.
Yeah, absolutely. They have very clearly said that investment advisor will provide implementation services to its advisory clients only through direct schemes and products in the securities market.
Okay. How much fees can financial advisors charge to investors? Is there any clarity, Lovai, about how much or what is the right amount of fee that advisors can charge clients?
I mean, the way I think about it, if for a minute you forget the regulation, just look at it as a contract between two individuals or between a company and an individual.
Yeah.
I am offering you a particular service. I am saying this is the cost. Unless you see value for the cost, you know, you're not going to be comfortable with it, or at least you might pay that fee and then realize, oh, there is no value. So I will not renew. I will not continue the relationship. So I think logically it is ultimately that, but I think to ensure that the investor is protected at all times, SEBI had mentioned in the consultation paper that they would want to put certain limits, outer limits on the fees. And that's what's mentioned in the gazette, that, you know, it would be as per board. My guess is there'll be a circular, which as far as I know, when it's not yet out.
Okay.
So when it comes, we will know what is the right fee to be charged.
Okay. There is another amendment that SEBI has made in the investment advisor guidelines, saying that individual advisors who have more than 150 clients must be registered as a non-individual or a corporate advisory firm, whatever the case may be. What is the implication of this to the investor, to the client?
So first and foremost, I think we have to just understand the reason or the logic behind this. And from what I have also reading is that in the broking regulations, maybe a couple of decades ago, a similar sort of movement happened that, you know, we had to corporatize the whole broking community. And there was a big hue and cry saying, oh, this will never last, because in the earlier days, you had individuals whom you knew as brokers, and they were big brokers.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing became corporatized. So I think what SEBI is, if I am an individual and I am providing advice to clients, there is some sort of finite limit on my ability to provide the right type of advice and also ensure it is communicated to all my clients and interactions with clients that are required to take place. And there's a finite limit. Beyond that, you know, it becomes very difficult for me to continue offering the same level of service to such clients. And SEBI, in its wisdom, has put a limit of 150 and said up to 150 clients you can deal once you cross 150, then you better corporatize your services.
So what will I get as a customer if my advisor suddenly corporatizes his or her services?
I think the big difference between an individual and a corporate or a non-individual sort of entity will be process. That there will be a team, there'll be a structure, there'll be a method with which certain things are followed. And more than anything, there is a continuity that will happen beyond an individual person. So to that extent, I think it becomes a little more systematic. It's more sort of easily open to audit and to, you know, auditing the process or checking why something was done in a certain way. So I think that's probably the reason. So as an individual, what will happen is your individual advisor. So first and foremost, the individual advisor has a choice. And again, there has been a debate about how do you define the 150 clients.
Is it a family one client, or there are four members in a family?
Each of them. I don't know how they are defining it. I would expect that many relationships is the intent. Now, I don't know what the wordings exactly will mean in terms of interpretation.
Okay.
So the individual advisor will have a choice that, okay, I don't want to become non-individual. Then I have, say, 200 clients today. Mm. I will say, okay, here this, I will deal with this 149 or 150. Mm. I will not add any more. Or if I add, I will replace somebody. And these other 50, I will let go of and tell them, sorry, I'm not advising you anymore.
Okay.
That's one option. The other option is, no, you know, I don't want to let go of this business. Then I have to corporatize my service. I have to become non-individual. So I have to become either a partnership, LLP, private limited, which means I might have to have another either investor or advisor whom I might partner with.
Okay.
I might merge with a larger sort of firm. Say, okay, let that firm be my umbrella under which I will function. I mean, obviously, there are different ways and means. So for the client, I think the important or the investor, the question really will be that what's going to change for him vis-a-vis that individual advisor that he or she was dealing with.
Mm.
And then take a call that, yes, I am willing to continue in this new model. No, I need to move out and find a way to transition out.
So there is a presence of a compliance officer audit. You mentioned about auditing of your corporate advisory being audited. So individual advisors don't have to have these kind of requirements. They don't need their books to be audited and all that.
No, they don't require. And as per the new regulation, even from a net worth point of view, they need a net worth of 5 lakh.
Yeah.
To become an individual advisor, for non-individual, it has gone up to 50 lakh.
Correct. So, you know, there are plenty of mutual fund distributors out there in the industry who give some sort of basic advice, to do some sort of basic risk assessment also. Of course, there's a lot of one-on-one personal relations with the clients as well. And mutual fund schemes are then recommended. And, you know, many of these distributors, we've known that, you know, they've done good work also. In a legal balance, they're still mutual fund distributors. They are not advisors. Okay. Now, from a client, of course, I'm not talking about from their point of view, because it's a business choice what they want to be. They want to be mutual fund distributors, fine. They want to be advisors, fine. How should a client decide? How should an investor decide? An individual decide whether I want a distribution services and whether I'm satisfied with the basic advisory, what the distributors are giving me, and am I okay with the recommendations if the recommendations are really smart. You know, some of the distributors are quite savvy in the sense that how they track the markets, how they track things. Or do I, must I go to a financial advisor? I pay them fees and I entail their services and let them handle my portfolio. How should I decide?
See, everyone has a choice. And I think especially for those who are already dealing with mutual fund distributors, I think there are certain sort of characteristics that you seek from your intermediary. Yeah. So one is that, you know, he or she is acting in your interest. They've understood what you really require, and they are sort of handholding you along the way.
Okay.
Now, some of these things, the individual advisor will be able to also offer, and distributor will be able to offer, and maybe he'll do a slightly better job in some cases than even somebody who's licensed. So I think it's a personal take, but we also have to keep in mind that there is an element of continuity that you require, maybe your family requires, and no individual is immortal, unfortunately. There is no right or wrong answer. I think that enough of, you know, different investors will be using their local barber, their local grocer, your kirana shop, but there it's a product and maybe it's a service and you're not really thought too much about, oh, what happens if my barber goes off from that shop? You know, I'm used to that particular guy, even if you're going to a larger entity.
Yeah.
Obviously, at that time, it is painful to make a change, even for changing a barber, right? Mm-hmm. So probably the same thing you'll face in a situation where something like this happens and you say, okay, I'm willing to live with that problem.
Okay.
And there's no guarantee that the same sort of feeling will continue even in a larger space. So I think that is really an individual choice. I think the important thing is for the investor to be aware that there are differences in both these models. These are the structural things that are provided. Obviously, there is a certain element of cost. Some of it may be a cost which you feel because you're writing out the fee check. In the distribution case, it's embedded, so you might not feel it, but you should be aware about it.
You should be aware.
And then you can take your decision.
Okay,
so, I mean, I don't think that we can force and say, no, we are the upper class and somebody else is the lower class. I think that I don't think there is a difference.
Okay. As long as things are transparent, you are saying customer should know what I'm getting and what I'm not getting.
Yeah, I think the most important thing in anything relating to money is transparency. So as long as you've understood that I am paying a fee, this is the quantum of fee, there is no further running, and therefore, you know, this is a cost I am paying and this is the value I am getting. Similarly, with a distributor, I should know that, yes, this is the earning that the distributor is making and there is no harm in the distributor making his commission. How it sort of works, on which products he gets, when does he get, I mean, you don't need to get into nitty-gritties, but you should know that there is this element of cost and obviously it's coming out of my return. And
you
take a call.
Do you think investors are more and more willing to pay a fee to their advisors? I mean, I know that, you know, the whole concept of charging a fee to for investment advisory was a very new concept really on investment advisory regulations came. We thought that it wouldn't take off, the fee-based advisors wouldn't work, but that was 2013. We are now in 2020. The regulations are still there, you know, and your fraternity has grown. But of course, it's a mix of distribution as well as advisory, to be very honest. But what has been your experience, Lovai? Are investors more and more willing to pay, or the hesitation to pay is still around? What is it with the new customers, the millennial customers, the young customers?
I think thanks to the media in a large way, people are aware about this advice and there is fee to be paid for advice.
Okay.
So it's only sort of increased, I would say, the willingness to pay.
Okay.
One thing for sure is that every sort of new client or prospect approaching us will certainly ask the question, what's your fee? Now, whether they sign up or not is a totally different sort of ballgame, whether am I willing to pay, should I pay, not pay, I was used to doing it on my own or through a distributor and so on and so forth.
Okay.
But we've realized that where clients are willing to look at things from a long-term point of view, they want to make sure that their long-term goals are getting met and they know that there is a process being followed in terms of engagement. They are more than happy paying fees. In fact, our experience in 2020, after the pandemic hit and we, you know, were sending out invoices to our clients, we had this, invoicing happening on a half yearly basis. We gave clients an option saying you can pay annual fees if you wish in advance. And for that, we'll give you like a small token discount.
Okay.
40% of people opted for that.
Really?
Most clients, I would say 99% of clients would have had 19-20 as a negative year. So they would have lost money. In absolute terms, irrespective of the allocation. I mean, unless somebody had a 10% in equity and 19 debt, maybe they were not minus. But almost everybody would have lost some money in 1920 because of the sharp fall in the last month. Despite that, people were willing to stick their neck and pay for the whole year. And yes, of course, clients who have been with us for, you know, a decade or more, you would expect that, okay, no problem. They have seen ups and downs. If they were there pre-2008, then they know, okay, fine, things go wrong and then things also correct themselves. So those are okay. But there are plenty of the clients who would have joined us in the last 5-6 years who also did the same.
Okay.
Which was frankly a big positive surprise for us. Did not expect this type of reaction.
Okay, Lovai, thank you so much for your valuable insights.
Thanks, Kazad.
Thanks for listening, folks. Do tune in for more Simply Safe podcasts. And for more news, views, and updates, log on to moneycontrol.com.